May 6, 1986, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2, Chuck Coffey and Marcia Ripp, interviewing Ann Albert. You were saying you were watching the Israeli parade yesterday, Mrs. Albert.
Yes, I did. I have seen quite a few parades in this country, but actually, in my youth, I've seen many a May Day parade in Vienna, which were highly organized, with all the politically oriented groups drilled in their marching and in great numbers. Then, unfortunately, I've seen the German Nazi parades march through the streets of Vienna. Overwhelming as they were in their discipline and their numbers. And when I saw the parade yesterday, the streets, I figured, oh my, what an unruly lot, not disciplined, just groups marching and talking to each other. And I reminded myself, it was wonderful, this parade where women and men were mixed and a great number of children. Maybe the children not quite aware of what they're marching for, but it was a togetherness. And a, though undisciplined looking march, a outpouring of goodwill and of freedom, as compared to the militarily impressive parades that I had seen before.
I've been wondering, what did you and your husband tell your children and when about your experiences?
We did not actually sit down and tell the children, because the children grew up in the years after the Second World War, where we still, in a way, by the neighborhood and the population, were considered as enemy alien. And we explained to the children that we were caught between two sets of unhappiness. As much as we felt American, we still were not considered full Americans here. We failed to teach them the German language because of that. And but in history, when the children became older and started asking questions, we would tell them, and we would tell them about the fate of our relatives and incidents that we had to go through or happenings before we could leave the country, and about how our trip was here and our efforts to establish ourselves here. And as they grew older, we told them more, and they also grasped more of the political background and the world historic importance and the persecution that we were in, that we were exposed to. We didn't actually sit down and tell them, now you listen, because children don't have the patience to listen. But slowly, on each occasion, and my husband and I read a lot about the past too, and once in a while we will hand the children a magazine or a book. I don't know if they read them. My son was became especially interested in the history. He was in the Rodef Shalom religious school. Actually, he had had his confirmation already when he was in the debating team. And Mr. Cavalier gave him a stack of books to read in reference to the Eichmann trial, which was in progress at that time. And that really awakened him politically and made him ask many questions.
Do you think that in any way your experiences and background affected your children compared with Native American children?
I am sure it did.
Can you think of anything specific?
Well, specific, I don't know. They have the Jewish feeling. Unfortunately, my children did not go exactly the way I had dreamed of their going, religiously and otherwise. Wouldn't say otherwise, but they're decent people, but maybe I have turned more to religion and expect them to do it in their beginning middle age, which maybe they cannot do yet. Also, having been brought up in a free-thinking way, our home was not too religious when they were little. So they really, unfortunately, don't have the background. I know now how to do it better, but it's too late. And on the grandchildren, I have no influence. So, there you go.
Where are your children now?
My son is married and lives near Baltimore in Maryland. He has, from his first marriage, a daughter who is now 17 years old, and from his second marriage, a boy 9 and a girl 4. My daughter lives in Pittsburgh, is going on 40 and is not married.
And her profession?
Think about
her profession.
She's a teacher.
In the
public schools. Teacher in public schools.
Excuse me.
When she was in sixth grade, she decided she was going to be a sixth grade teacher, having been enamored with her teacher there. And so she became a sixth grade teacher. Now she's teaching elementary school.
You told us that when you were, excuse me, when you were here, you used to be invited to speak before high schools. Will you tell us a little bit about that and about other places that you were, other ways you contributed to the community?
I was invited to speak before the German classes in Taylor Allaby's High School and give them a review of Austrian history, which I tried to do in a rather limited vocabulary because of the audience.
In other words, you spoke in German.
I spoke in German. Supposed. It was a German exercise, actually. And tried to give an outline of the development of history there to the very last day. Being a public school, I was very careful with the details that I gave in the persecution of Jews. But I'm sure that all the listeners were intelligent enough to really understand what I was saying. And I was invited by several women's clubs. I can't recall the names. How word got around, I don't know. I had worked in a settlement house, in Kingsley Settlement House in East Liberty. And word through them must have gotten around because they had evening classes for what they called outside people, women who wanted to take up, got to know me. And later on I was asked to become a substitute teacher in public schools without having a teaching certificate in Pennsylvania.
Did you teach very long as a substitute teacher?
Yes, I did. Strangely enough, my major is math. I first substituted in German and then in math, And since I had studied Latin for 4 years, I substituted for 6 months in Latin in Peabody High School. Had three different grades, and I had the supervisor, Miss Faison, sit in many of my classes to observe me, and she was very pleased. And the chairman of the math department came and pleaded with me to take my certificate so they could employ me full time, but at that time I wasn't interested in it. I never have. But I was rather fully employed as a substitute teacher.
How did you get involved with Rabbi Shalom?
We were still living in Forest Hills, where there actually wasn't a Jewish community at that time, a Jewish congregation. And we found that the most liberal congregation in Pittsburgh would be Rabbi Shalom. And we enrolled our children when they were 6, 7 years old in the religious school on Sunday mornings. That was long before the new building went up, the school building. And my dear mother, may she rest in peace, took the children every Sunday to religious school. She was not very proficient in English, but she said people there were lovely. It seemed that a young group there had breakfast. She was walking the halls waiting for the children to be dismissed from religious school, and they invited her in for breakfast, and she thought there was such a lovely congregation and so friendly. And we attended religious services when we could. My husband worked on Saturday, and we lived far away, and there were many things to do. And my husband was still studying aside from his job, and I had 5 people to take care of. It wasn't too easy, but later on we intensified our activities or presence at Rabbi Shalom.
Now you yourself are very active with sisterhood, I believe.
Yes, now I am.
Now what is it you're doing there?
I'm now in charge of the workshop who delivers handmaids to the gift corner.
How much time do you devote to this?
Officially, I devote Tuesday mornings from 9 to 1. But unofficially, I devote a lot more because I'm in charge of buying the material, providing it with budgetary interests in mind, and hoping for new projects, and keeping contact with the gift corner. I have a lot of homework, some of which I can show you afterwards.
How many women do you have working on this project?
I have, I think, up to 30 women. Not all of them always attending, but incredibly stable group. And women, though up in years, just wait for the Tuesday morning, whether or not, to come, because it's one set day in their week where they look forward to doing something without straining themselves. And the social hours we have, at the social hour we have from 12 to 1, eating our brown bag and having coffee served by a temple is a very delightful time.
Are you involved in any other activities at Temple?
Well, since I'm on the board, I'm being given extra jobs like delivery of flowers to sick people and whatever comes up, whatever, but not too much, because this is really a very time-consuming function.
Now, I want you to tell us something about the Friendship Club. When you joined, what it was like and what you did there. Excuse me.
Having lived in Forest Hills, we were actually Johnny Come Lately, if that's the expression, members of the club only when we moved to Squirrel Hill in 1959. The Friendship Club was established in 1936, I think, 34, 36. If I'd known, I would have prepared some material. We became active in it because it was a way of communicating with other people in similar situations. It was an intellectual outlet and a resource of studies, of contacts. At that time, we were reading the American German language national paper, Der Aufbau, meaning Reconstruction, which each of us subscribed to, which brought news relating to our lives from Germany and Austria, and kept sort of contact with the world of art and science that still bound us to the old country. We found that since somehow the Germans and Austrians are steeped in having clubs or groups or organized, that this was a good outlet. We were, as I see now, a highly structured group. We had a program committee. We had a religious committee, and for many, many years we conducted our own high holiday services. We had our seders at Passovers, and we had a very strictly organized telephone committee that was spreading news of deaths, burials very quickly. Each period was a spreading out, I don't know what you call it, domino, umbrella effect of 10 persons. Everybody had 10 persons. Since the membership was over, I don't know, 200-300, it worked very well. We never had any grants or anything coming from the Federation. We were the ones that donated every year. I remember it started with $200, then $400. In every drive, we were active and contributed. We contributed to social causes. We adopted two orphans in Israel through the Pioneer Women. We supported Rabbi Heber in his efforts with mentally handicapped activities. The Horizon Home was one of our beneficiaries. Rod of Shalom congregation was very much interested in our activities, and at our 25th anniversary, Rabbi Freehoff was the speaker. And Rabbi Jacob spoke to us often, and his parents, of good memory, were members of our club after they arrived here.
And it's Rabbi Jacob's parents.
Rabbi mm-hmm. Jacob's parents. And we were very busy in having a program every Saturday night. And it was something wonderful for everybody to know, families or single people, that they had a place to go on Saturday. And there was a speaker, there was discussion, and afterwards there were refreshments which people bought. We employed a woman who was paid by the evening. She worked and she bought bakeries which she sold there, and the coffee, and was a very easy, well-oiled way of doing things. And people who liked to stay were invited to stay and play cards. There were many card games afterwards. Never closed before midnight. And there was entertainment, there were musical evenings. We had a monthly paper of which, a newsletter of which my husband was editor, sole worker, editor and sole worker, as you know it, for 13 years. And if there were special editions as crises or wars or anything Israel, we had special notices. We had, in summertime, we had picnics in public parks for which one had to stand in for the permit or places one had to stand in line on January 1st in the morning in the city parks department. Encouraged volunteers for organizations as the blind or the deaf, and of course for the other civic organizations. We often had speakers from other organizations, Zionist organizations, or others come and speak to us. Not considering them as competition, but presenting their purpose before an audience.
Where did you hold your meetings?
Now that's a very touchy question. For years we were sub-renting on the third floor. I think it was Benny Brith on Forbes, where a block that well, boutique was.
Yes, yes.
Then we were made to move, and would you believe it, we went up and down Forbes Avenue. Nobody could take us in. We were very angry at the Jewish community organization, who had their new buildings here that would not take us on Saturday night with various excuses. The janitorial staff was not working on Saturday night. The room had to be cleaned up after us, which really wasn't so. We tried, Anathan House wouldn't take us for the same reason and for the parking situation. We ended up the last few years, then we were some years in the New Light Synagogue. That was not difficult to get. After they decided to be terribly Orthodox, they threw us out. They rebuilt their kitchen, and they wouldn't let us in make our coffee in that kitchen. So we were thrown out. We ended up at the Jewish War Veterans on Forbes, which we had. It wasn't the nicest room, but it was comfortable enough and was kept clean enough for us. So we rented that for a good many years. But we were really not welcomed with open arms.
Why?
Why? I don't know.
Really?
No, I don't know. Maybe we were too ethnic, or we paid our rent religiously everywhere. But as I say, the ones used the Saturday night business with the janitorial, I think we moved out of the third floor of the Benny Brith building because some of our members couldn't make the steep stairs up there. And in the veterans, Jewish veterans place, I think there was an elevator. But otherwise, we really couldn't establish the cause.
What happened to the Friendship Club? Where is it now?
In 1979, the membership, most of the members were in their 70s, one could say. Since we did not have a second generation, with all our attempts at entertaining and intellectually trying to convince them. Just a few of the members were able to interest their children in our organization. No question about it. I mean, we understood perfectly well, and we knew that was, for us it was necessary. We had lost our families, and we looked for new friendships and families. But the next generation didn't need that. And they had established their own social and civic contacts. So in 79, when many of the people became ill, many of the people, the members had died, we suggested to dissolve the club in a very orderly form. We were incorporated, we took a lawyer, and he took all the legal steps necessary. By that time we had in our treasury about $10,000, which we donated to the Morgan David in Israel, to Rabbi Heber, to the Horizon Home, I don't know, I think the Federation. The money was very wisely, with good accounting and the approval of the board, distributed. In, I believe, October, November 1979, we had the last of our yearly banquets. And my husband edited the last December issue. And my husband died the following January 15. It was as if knowing. Well, he was a very ill man at that time, but he managed to attend that banquet. And the contact was kept up. I saw to it, well, my husband had been a president for 3 years, and I had been a president for 3 years. And many of our remaining living members were interested in keeping up the social contacts. For several years following the dissolution of the club, we organized a dinner once a year, or a luncheon in one of the great restaurants. Since we did not have a treasurer or any treasury, it was all done by phone. We didn't even spend money for mail, printing or mail. And we always got a good crowd together. And just everybody paid for his dinner as usual and had a good crowd. But the last few years, I don't know, the last one took place maybe 5 or 6 years ago, since my friend and I, who were very active in that, I'm just about the last one left that can walk somewhere and talk anywhere. We've discontinued that.
Do you miss it very much?
Well, many of us had become members of congregations, and many of us transferred their energies and interests and social needs into those congregations. And so have I, personally. I would think I have more time for reading, more time for correspondence, but that's only an illusion.
Well, I think we can turn it over now.